This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That song was called Driver's Seat, which is a perfect lead-in to my next guest. His name is Eric Jaffe. He's a contributor to Atlantic Cities and Fast Company, and recently went to Mountain View, California, to sit in a car, not in the driver's seat. In fact, there was no actual driver in the driver's seat. There was instead a car that drove itself. It's being developed by the people at Google, who have actually been working on this project for a couple of years, and they are making progress. So what's it like to be there when the car is driving itself? Eric, welcome to America Weekend.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
So you're in the car, and there are somebody from Google in the car also, but not in the driver's seat. And what's the car doing?
So there is somebody in the driver's seat.
Oh.
From Google. So there's two people from Google in the front. They're both specially trained. There is a driver, quote-unquote driver, who's there just to make sure if we get into a jam, he can take over in a pinch. And then to his right in the shotgun seat, there is an engineer who's holding a computer that kind of lets you see what the car is, again, quote-unquote seeing in a digital sense. But I was in the back seat, and the driver, the human driver, did not actually drive for most of the trip except for two instances when he had to take over. So we drove for about a half hour, and the car did pretty much everything itself.
And how weird is that when you're sitting in the back and you can talk to the guy in front and he can turn his head to look at you, and eventually I guess we're going to get to a point where the seats could even face each other because the car is going to go by itself. How was it for you in that back seat?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the possibilities are endless. As I wrote in the story, I mean, it was an amazingly smooth ride. I was kind of shocked at how quickly any anxiety I might have had just kind of washed away because the car performed like a master. I mean, not even just like a human at times. It was better than human at times.
Now, you wrote in your piece that Google actually was able to get the car out on the highway a couple of years ago because that's simpler than city driving. But when you were doing it, you were driving around Mountain View, and the car was stopping at intersections, making right turns, making left turns. What was difficult for the car on that trip?
Yeah, so Google has kind of brought the car along in two discrete stages. The first, as you mentioned, was this highway driving. And highway driving can be stressful at times, but at the end of the day, it's really just staying in your lane and maintaining your speed. City driving, of course, there's a lot more variables. You've got pedestrians, you've got cyclists, you've got other cars trying to cut in, you've got lots of turns. All these kind of unpredictable variables, and that's what they're teaching the car to handle now. And again, as you mentioned, it handles most of these things very well. It does the left turns, it does merges, it knows right of way, it can detect, a cyclist making a hand gesture that he's going to go left. It can even read one of those temporary construction signs that says stop and slow on either side.
Wait a second. There's a guy on the side of the road, and he's got one of those things that flips around, stop on one side, slow on the other side. It's not normally there, so it's not normally on a map, and the car recognizes what the sign is and adjusts itself to it?
Absolutely, yeah. So the car's got kind of several layers of sensors. It's got this spinning bucket on top that turns around at 64 times a second and kind of collects all this 3D data from all around us. It's also got radar, so it can kind of bounce its signals under a car, so you could see a car that's away from you in a blind spot that a human wouldn't be able to detect. And it's got these cameras facing forward that can read the environment in some sense, and it can read the difference between slow and stop just in case some of these temporary road work situations arise.
You actually came upon one of these situations where there were cones in the lane and the car didn't know what to do, right?
That's right. So there were two times when the car, when our driver, again, quote unquote, took over and had to drive the car himself. And the first time was when we came upon a series of cones. A lane was blocked. And there were maybe a dozen cones kind of guiding the cars into, guiding all the traffic into another lane. And so the self-driving car kind of started to make this turn, but it didn't know what to do at some point, and it kind of stopped. So the driver took over and swerved around the cones and then put it back into auto mode.
How soon does Google think they can have these practically on the road with, you know, humans giving up their right to drive, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question, I guess. I mean, what makes that interesting is that Google, of course, is not a car manufacturer. So part of it is, when will the car industry begin to kind of accept this technology and incorporate it itself? There's various predictions about that. I mean, Nissan has said it's going to release a car by 2020 that can be fully automated. There are other estimates by perhaps more conservative experts that say 2030, 2040 is really the timeline we're looking at. But everybody seems to believe we're as far along as we've ever been in this push toward a driverless car, and that we're really not too far away.
Do you think Americans want this?
Well, that's a good question, because it will kind of change the relationship they have with their cars. However, it's going to save, well, there's two huge benefits. The first is that it saves an enormous amount of time. I mean, think of all the time you spend in traffic, stressed out, what else you could be doing, whether that's working or spending time with family or just catching up on, you know, a radio show that you didn't get to, you know, listen to them maybe on the internet.
Yeah.
So that's the one benefit. But the other, the huge one, is safety. I mean, the numbers show that 90% of all accidents that occur are the result of human error, and there are, you know, 30,000 plus deaths a year in the United States from car accidents. And the self-driving car won't make many of these human errors. I mean, it won't get tired, it won't drive drunk, it won't be an aggressive driver, it won't text and drive. And so it's really a game changer in the safety sense above all.
What do you think the insurance companies are going to say about it? I mean,
if it isn't
going to make it safe, aren't they also going to worry about the huge liability of some robot car killing a person?
I think liability is absolutely kind of one of the main remaining issues that city officials and, you know, even perhaps federal officials have to work out with the industry. But insurance knows how to gauge liability now with very unpredictable drivers, so it could actually be easier if there's a very predictable algorithm showing what the car can and can't do.
As you were passing people on the street, did they know they were watching a Google self-driving car go by? Is it labeled?
It's labeled on the bumper. So first of all, I mean, the bucket that's spinning on top, as I mentioned, should give us away.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, there's a little sticker on the bumper that says self-driving car. What I found interesting during our cruise through Mountain View is that the car wasn't generating all these, you know, onlookers and these gawkers from the street. I guess people are kind of accepting it there. Of course, that's Google's home territory, so they're probably used to it. But
but
I think that the way that how well it drives kind of speaks to that as well.
Have you had people come up to you since this article saying, "I want one"?
I think a lot of people do. I mean, it can really change for city mobility in particular, the way we kind of get around potentially. Think about replacing cab fleets with these autonomous vehicles. You can kind of use your phone and say, "Oh, I need to be picked up here. I need to go here," and then that transaction is finished, and you're brought there safely, and we could get a lot fewer car owners within the city.
This would be the ultimate Uber app.
Yeah, and I don't think that I think Google's aware of that. I mean, Google made a massive investment in Uber about a year ago, and I don't think that was an accident. I think Google recognizes kind of the transformative impact that this technology might have.
Is Google, I know they've been doing Google Maps for years, and they're terrific, and they've been doing Google Street View for years, but is Google going to have to ramp up the amount of data they have in some sort of physical database to make these cars aware of every single thing that's out there?
That's a great question. Yeah, so one of the limitations of the self-driving car right now is that it does need to work off of a baseline map. And now this map has to be a little more complex than your traditional Google map. I mean, the map that they use for the car needs to kind of show the severity of a turn. It needs to show all the traffic lights and what kind of traffic light it is. It needs to have just a lot more detail than your basic Google map. So they have to map the terrain before the car can drive on it, because the car needs some amount of a baseline understanding of what its environment's going to present, even though it has all these other sensors, in order to be as effective as possible. So that is a potential limiting factor, but as Google told me, I mean, they've done this before. They've made Google Maps, so there's no reason to think they can't map the country again.
Yeah, it seems to me like the variable there will be humans. Humans crossing the street, humans in non-self-driving cars doing stupid things, texting while driving, etc. We've put a link to Eric's full article on the America Weekend Facebook page. I appreciate you joining me here today, Eric.
Thanks, Paul.
Eric Jaffe, Atlantic Cities and Fast Company contributor here with Paul Harris on America Weekend.
America Weekend.